Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. It's Friday, and it's time for our media roundtable. On today's show, we're discussing media coverage of money in politics and the Koch brothers. Earlier this month, Bloomberg reported that a $1.3 billion boost to their collective fortune sent their net worth above the $100 billion mark. Charles and David Koch are now the fifth and sixth wealthiest people in the world. The new documentary, Citizen Koch, looks at the impact of the Koch brothers and the impact that the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United had on the 2012 recall in Wisconsin and the Republican presidential primary. Filmmakers Tia Lesson and Carl Diehl said they had to launch a Kickstarter campaign last year to ensure the documentary was not silenced by the money and influence of David Koch. Last May, The New Yorker's Jane Mayer reported that ITVS, the independent television service, backed out of their deal with the Citizen Koch filmmakers because they refused to take the word Koch out of the film's title. David Koch sits on the PBS board affiliate WNET in New York, and we'll get the backstory on today's show. Tia Lesson and Carl Diehl are Academy Award nominated filmmakers. They produced and directed Trouble the Water, a film that takes you inside Hurricane Katrina. They were also archival and supervising producers of Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11 and co-producers of his most recent film, Capitalism, A Love Story. And Tia Lesson and Carl Diehl join me in studio. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having us on, Rose.
Glad to be here.
It's great to have you both. So as we always do on Friday, we start off on a positive note and give kudos to a reporter who did a good job this week. So, Tia, what did you see this week that you thought was done well?
Well, actually, that Bloomberg article was terrific. It's hard to estimate the net worth of folks like the Kochs, and the fact that, you know, we now know that they have $100 billion collectively. That actually puts them as number one. If you take the two together, they have more money than the Gates, Bill Gates. They have more money than Warren Buffett. They have more money than Carlos Slim in Mexico. They are the richest men in the world.
And yet, when I was reading about this, the Huffington Post reported that half of the country is not familiar with the Koch brothers. Half of the country has never heard of them, even though they spent $400 million on the last election.
They don't know that they're familiar with them, but the chances are that nobody in America has not been touched in some way by the messaging that comes out of the political machine that they've built and that they're financing. You know, especially around elections, a lot of these third-party ads that run for and against candidates or for and against issues—they call them issue ads—they change the public understanding of really important issues. You know, from environmental issues to labor issues. So,
we'll talk about that because that's the focus of your new film. But before we do, Carl, what did you see this week that you thought was done well?
Well, I have to say it was probably with my 3-year-old, the latest Daniel Tiger episode. this whole idea though of the net worth of the Kochs really does matter, and. You know, it's really difficult to quantify, but I think it's really important to understand that this is the same money and they like to be represented as separate individuals, but it's really, you know, it's the same kit and caboodle.
Well, what do you think overall of media coverage of the super rich, especially those who are so involved in politics? And now that it's easy for a lot of people to remain anonymous when they give money to campaigns, Tia, what are your thoughts overall on the coverage?
Well, I think that the media, we have to remember that so much of this money that's pumped into the electoral process comes out in broadcast ads. You know, so the networks, the broadcast networks especially, are profiting from these millions and billions of dollars that are going into these campaigns. It's no wonder that we don't see great investigative reporting coming out of the networks for that very reason. They make these record profits off of people like the Koch. So I think there's a problem there. But I think there's been extraordinary reporting, you know, particularly by freelance journalists like the Bay Area's Li Fang.
He writes for The Nation.
That's right.
He's been on the show a bunch of times.
Jane Mayer has done a terrific job. And, you know, there's a great number of people on the Money in Politics beat. You know, they're doing good work. But we don't know enough about who these guys are and where their spending comes from because of the disclosure laws, because they're able to spend their money through third-party front groups, it's really hard to follow that money trail.
And also, you know, journalists and, you know, like even like ourselves, but there's a tendency towards wanting to always report everything as though there are two sides and equate the two sides. You know, different formats. Television is a difficult format to do that kind of in-depth reporting because there are rules about giving equal time to different sides. And so I think a mistake that a lot of people make is equating the money spent by folks like the Kochs with money spent by folks like George Soros.
Well, can you elaborate on that? Because Tom Steyer is a wealthy environmentalist from the Bay Area, and he's putting a lot of money into stopping Keystone. And whenever he's interviewed, sometimes people say, oh, so you're the left's version of the Koch brothers, basically.
Well, how does Tom profit from the political stand he takes? That's what I'd want to know. Because we know very clearly that the Kochs do profit. Their business interests are completely aligned with their political agenda. They make more money when they deny global climate change. They make more money when they try to suppress minimum wage legislation. They make more money when they advocate and actually succeed in getting the state of Kansas to eliminate income tax for corporations. Those are the kinds of positions they advocate, and it affects all of us.
And you know, they don't do it in the light of day either, which is, I think, is a telling detail. You know, the political operatives and spokespeople for the agenda that they're promoting are not very direct or transparent about exactly what it is that they're asking for.
Well, doing your research on the Koch brothers, how would you describe them to half the population that's never heard of them?
They are oil tycoons who inherited $100 million from their father, who was a fierce right winger and the founder of the John Birch Society. But they own companies that extract wood and timber and oil, and they refine oil, and they put out a lot of consumer products out there. So a lot of things that we use every day. Brawny paper towels, Angel Soft tissues. I mean, these are Koch brother products. Who are they, though? I mean, they are the guys that deployed $400 million in the 2012 elections. They want to change this country. They want to eliminate regulation of their businesses. They want to eliminate taxes. And they want to essentially eliminate all the government services and the social safety net that we've built over the years.
Yeah, and I would also tell half of America that for decades they've been perfecting ways of deploying money into the political process that change the way that people think about and understand issues that affect them every single day. But doing it secretly and spending the money through political groups and front groups that they've set up. And it's an interesting strategy that really blossomed around the last election cycle, post Citizens United, which made it easier for people to take that kind of money and not just spend it to influence politicians on policy, but to influence voters.
They also have very close ties to the media. The New York Times did a report about the annual meeting of the Koch brothers in Colorado Springs, where they basically lay out their mission. And they talked about political action groups, educating grassroots activists, and also media. The Koch brothers have been eyeing the Tribune Company's 8 regional newspapers. This got a lot of attention about 6 months ago, including the LA Times. And then they have watchdog.org, a collection of journalists covering local government activity. The program began back in 2009. And then they also sit on the boards, or David Koch sits on the boards of WNET and WGBH Boston. And there has been a campaign of activists in Boston to try to get David Koch off of the boards. First off, why do you think the Kochs so strongly support public television?
That's a really good question. I mean, because we know that the organization that they founded and the bankroll has actively tried to eliminate public funding for public media. So you got to ask the question, why would they spend money on public media? I don't know what their motivation is, but I know the result of their money spend. We felt that personally. We made a film. We had public television support, funding for a film, and a broadcast partnership. And because of David Koch's presence on the flagship station in New York City, as a board member and a donor, our film was dropped.
So independent television service ITVS, they fund a lot of really great documentaries. They were initially backing your film.
We had
yes,
to deal
yes.
with
it.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened?
Well, you know, we'd been in partnership with them for many months, and they were the last piece to come in so that we could finish the film. And we were accepted to premiere at the Sundance Film Festival last year. And we shared that news with the commissioning editor at ITVS, and we started getting phone calls and texts frantically, you know, needing to see the cut that Sundance had seen. Now, they had recently seen a rough cut of the film and had really applauded it, and it had the title Citizen Coke. You know, they particularly had liked the idea that we were giving voice to working class, salt-of-the-earth Republican voters in the heartland of America. But something happened. Something triggered this concern internally. And after a series of extended phone calls and meetings with them, it became clear to us that they objected strenuously to the title of the film. And it wasn't the word citizen.
Well, in the piece that Jane Mayer wrote last year, she reported that WNET, the public television station in New York, the president, Neil Shapiro, was anticipating a seven-figure donation from David Koch and threatened to pull WNET out of the Independent Lens series after it broadcast Alex Gibney's film Park Avenue, which is sharply critical of David Koch. It basically looks at the wealthiest people in New York City and then compares them with people in Harlem who live like a 10-minute drive from where these people in New York live. And she writes, Shapiro acknowledged that in his conversation with ITVS officials about the documentary Park Avenue, he was so livid that he threatened not to carry its films in the future. Can you talk about, I mean, David Koch didn't tell Shapiro to pull the film, right? Shapiro actually called David Koch and said, you need to see this film.
Well, that's how insidious this money is.
That's what Jane Mayer reported.
That's right. Well, that's right. WNET extended all sorts of favors to David Koch. They gave David Koch the last word in the Park Avenue film. They, even though he declined to talk with the filmmaker, they gave Koch Industries the very last word in this film.
Which is completely unprecedented.
Totally unprecedented. No one does that. We didn't know any of this. We didn't know this was happening at the time. All we knew was that we were getting very strange messages from our funders and from our partners who had, you know, 3 weeks earlier cheered on the film. They were scared to death. They were scared of our film. They thought, you know, now we know that they thought that the funding and NET would pull out of Independent Lens and that would deal, you know, a death blow to that series.
Yeah, and you know, it's an amazing series. It's a beautifully curated series. It's a great place to see, you know, some of the very best, highest quality documentaries on television. You know, it's the best television venue in many, many respects. And you know, I can't imagine the feeling of being, you know, working for an institution that's founded to work in the public interest and founded to be an advocate for filmmakers and for diversity of voices and, you know, on the public airwaves, to be in that position.
David Koch, according to Current, has given almost $19 million to WGBH, the PBS affiliate in Boston, over the past 30 years. Is there any evidence that he has tried to manipulate the broadcasters and the content?
Well, according to PBS's own standards, there doesn't have to be evidence. PBS says, and they say that to us as independent filmmakers, they scrutinize the funding that we get. And they say, all that needs to happen is that there be an appearance of a conflict of interest. Now, David Koch's money goes into NOVA, the science program. This is a guy who denies global climate change. He's a climate change denier. He's with that extreme 1% of the population who ignores scientific evidence. So, yeah. Is there appearance of a conflict of interest? Absolutely. Is that enough to make PBS reject his funding? Absolutely. By their own standards. He needs to get off that board.
And just to be clear, you know, shortly after the Jane Mayer article in the New Yorker came out, David Koch did resign from the board of WNET. You know, the reasons why, I guess, we could speculate on. But did they get that $1 million or that six, seven-figure donation?
Nope. They did not.
I'm speaking with Tia Lesson and Carl Diehl, producers of the new documentary Citizen Coke that looks at money, power, and democracy in the United States. They produced and directed Trouble the Water, a film that takes you inside Hurricane Katrina. They were supervising producers of Fahrenheit 9/11 and co-producers of Capitalism, a Love Story. And Citizen Coke will hopefully will debut in Northern California on June 27th, but I understand you're still looking for theaters?
That's right. We encourage folks to call their local theater if you want to see this film.
How does that work?
Well, you know, the theaters want to bring films that people want to see. So we're, you know, hoping to get a firm commitment from a theater, and you can help us.
And you can join us at 866-798-8255. What is your opinion of the media's coverage of money, democracy, and power in the United States, specifically when we're talking about powerful people like the Koch brothers, who gave $400 million to elect Republicans in the last election and are expected to give even more this time around? And a lot of this money is anonymous. We've done a lot of shows about this. What are your thoughts on how the media are covering this, and what questions do you have for Tia and Carl about what they found in doing the film Citizen Coke, and just the backstory, how they got funding for this film and their relationship with ITVS? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. And if there was a story you saw this week that you'd like to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So because we're living in a time when so many wealthy people are getting involved in the media, how do you think public television stations should determine who's on their boards?
Hmm. Well, first of all, I think, you know, we as the public need to support our public media, whether it's radio or television. They need to be accountable to us. If they're going to be accountable to the funders need to be us. And also we need to make sure that they continue to receive the government funding that they so deserve. That's the best way to make sure that the public media is by, for, and of the public. As in terms of screening board members, I mean, I think there needs to be some scrutiny about, you know, where this money comes from, what kind of deals they're making to get the money. David Sirota, the journalist, just did an extraordinary job exposing the relationship between the Arnold Foundation and, again, WNET, who was not only soliciting money from a very extremist ideological foundation that is opposed to pensions, for example, but they were cultivating that money in exchange for programming a series that was against pensions.
Hmm. That, I've never heard of the Arnold Foundation.
It is run by one of the former Enron executives who's made it his sort of agenda to eliminate, the pensions for public employees across the country. And to blame teachers and nurses and firefighters for the fiscal crisis of the states, which we all know was caused by Wall Street.
Carl, how do you think this should be dealt with? Because we're seeing a lot of money being poured into media. Jeff Bezos buying the Washington Post, Omidyar starting an outlet with Jeremy Scahill and Glenn Greenwald. I mean, there's so many people with a lot of money now starting journalism organizations.
There are. I mean, the Scahill Greenwald venture is really fascinating because it's a nonprofit model. And so, you know, I think that's a way to be free, of the influence.
But it's also important to look at Omidyar's background, which we did with Robert McChesney about 6 months ago, and looked at his political affiliations and his holdings. So it's another case of just following the money, regardless of who's starting these, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe that should be the tagline for our movie, is follow the money.
Yeah, look, there's a history of right-wing ownership of media in this country. That's, you know, we see that with Fox, and we know what has happened to Fox in terms of their coverage of everyday issues. But the question is, will there be seepage into the editorial content? We think our experience with this film shows that the Kochs are, you know, very powerful in that way, and that there would be changes in the kind of coverage that papers like the LA Times runs.
I mean, it's one of the reasons that we do what we do, that we chose to be independent documentary filmmakers. And we've both worked, you know, in different capacities. We've worked for the mainstream media. And we have the freedom to tell the stories that we want to tell the way that we want to tell them. And, the question you put out to the listeners about how the media covers these issues, we were making this film during the 2012 campaign. Mm. And every night there was something about money and politics. There was the super PACs were getting covered. We were starting to understand the implications of what, you know, Citizens United had unleashed in terms of election spending. And we knew intuitively that come November 7th, that coverage was going to evaporate because there was going to be another story to cover. And, so I think there was good coverage of that issue, but it went away. And we were very much aware of that, and that we had this opportunity to go deeper and continue that conversation long after the news cycle ended.
Carl Diehl and Tia Lesson are the filmmakers behind the new documentary Citizen Coke. You can watch a trailer at yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from a few callers before we go to break. Let's go to Roger in San Francisco. Hi, Roger. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. The bottom line is follow the money, but it's so simplistic, people just don't grasp it. What's happening, if you look back in history, the National Socialists got started in Germany by co-opting industrialists in the Ruhr Valley. They just wanted to get that money. The industrialists was concerned about communism. They were concerned about unions. And they funded much of the National Socialist movement. Even in our own country, some of our banks sent money over there to support them. Hitler was on Time magazine, was Man of the Year. Money eventually oversteps itself. An imbalance forms, like we have in this country, where there's a great deal of wealth on one small sector and a great deal of poverty on another. They're trying to control it by controlling what people read and hear and see. How do you do that? You control the media. The media runs on money. They need advertising. You just, all you have to do is just get certain people inserted in certain areas. You can control the thinking of a country.
Well, thank you for calling, Roger. After the break, we're going to play a couple clips from your film, because you found in Wisconsin that even the most ardent Republicans, who also happen to be union members, we rarely hear from them in the media, but they completely oppose what's happening. I mean, 70% of the population disagrees with the Supreme Court's decision on Citizens United, and that's important to point out.
That's right. These are moderate Republicans in the heartland who feel that their party has been taken away from them. And, you know, they want to fight for the values that they so believe in, and money has trumped their voices.
And these are Republicans wearing SEIU hats. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised that they're working and helping veterans and taking care of older people and teaching. But we just don't hear those voices really in the media. How hard were they to find?
Oh, they're, you know, all over the state of Wisconsin. They're all over every part of this country. You know, they're good-hearted people who are, you know, have values that they deeply care about, who believe that money from folks like the Kochs are destroying their own party.
And we'll hear a clip from some of them right after the break. We're speaking today with Tia Lesson and Carl Diehl, the filmmakers behind the new documentary Citizen Coke, which looks at the impact the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United had on the 2012 election in Wisconsin and the presidential primary. It's your call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's toll-free 866-798-8255. Or you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, where you'll find links related to today's show.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up on Monday, we'll have a conversation about poetry. We'll be marking National Poetry Month by speaking with poets. How can poetry inspire, motivate, inform, and transform us and society? If you've got a favorite poet, we'd love to hear about her or him, and also what poems have made a long-lasting impression on you. That's on Monday. On Tuesday, we'll have a conversation about whether it's possible to develop without displacement. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, it's our Friday Media Roundtable, the day we speak with journalists about coverage of the week's news, and we're speaking with filmmakers Tia Lesson and Carl Diehl about coverage of money, power, and democracy in the United States. They're the filmmakers behind the new documentary, Citizen Coke. It takes a look at Citizens United, the recall effort in Wisconsin, the Republican presidential primary. And I love it because it gives a voice to people that we usually don't see in the national media, Republican union members who greatly oppose all of the money coming into their state, especially in Wisconsin. Citizen Coke will be debuting in Northern California on June 27th, but they're still looking for theater, so they're asking you to call your local theater to show Citizen Coke. And you can watch the trailer at yourcallradio.org. Tia Lesson and Carl Diehl are Academy Award-nominated filmmakers. They produced and directed Trouble the Water, a film that takes you inside Hurricane Katrina. They also were supervising producers of Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11 and co-producers of Capitalism, A Love Story. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What do you think of coverage of money in politics and the super rich funding so many journalism outfits? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Thanks again, Roger. Let's go next to Kevin in Santa Cruz. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. I think this discussion gets right to the fundamentals of why American democracy is really under extreme threat at the moment. To begin with, your guests have really pointed out the fact that the nonprofit sector is controlled by its funders. In other words, if you want to raise enough money to actually have a paid staff and an organization that can be effective, you have to meet the standards of the foundations and the individuals who make the gifts that run those, that fund those institutions. You can't run an organization by selling, cookies at a bake sale. You need real money. You don't run it off $25 gifts from people. So, and I've done fundraising, and it's very clear that you have to meet, if you don't meet those standards, you don't get the money. And now that the sector is controlled by people like the Koch brothers, who are actually opposed to the mandate of an organization like PBS, it's reached an extreme state. It's the same kind of condition where somebody with that kind of money can buy a U.S. senator. They only cost about $500,000 to own one. There's only 50 senators in the Congress. So unless we modify the tax code and start to bring some rationality back to how money is distributed in this country, we're not going to solve any of these problems.
Well, thank you. In the film, Tia, you showed the time when a person who was posing as David Koch called Governor Scott Walker and got right into his office and talked to him about efforts to, basically to push his agenda and the Koch brothers' agenda, which really says a lot because they had an open line to Scott Walker.
Oh, a buddy-buddy relationship. There was a bromance there, if you've ever seen it, yeah.
And on January 17th, 2012, nearly 1 million recall signatures were filed in Wisconsin. And at the time, Governor Walker was in New York at a Wall Street fundraiser in his honor. A whopping $60 million was spent on this, $45 million from Republicans and $15 million from Democrats.
Crazy. For a governor's for a recall race. It was unprecedented, record-level spending in Wisconsin.
And as you showed, when you went and talked to people, they were clearly really angry about their bargaining rights being taken away, but they seemed to be even more angry about the influence of money in their state.
Yeah, let's point out first that those numbers that you just cited are best estimates, because there's no way to really know exactly how much money is being spent.
Or where it comes from.
Yeah. Yeah, more importantly, you know, where it comes from, because, you know, there are still so many loopholes and new loopholes in the reporting laws. One of the things that we saw the impacts that Citizens United had that people hadn't immediately anticipated was states like Wisconsin that had longstanding bans and regulations of corporate spending in elections and strong disclosure requirements just stopped enforcing those laws. And, you know, and so that was happening in Wisconsin. And so there isn't any mechanism put in that was existing already to track that money because it wasn't allowed.
Well, again, in the film Citizen Coke, Tia and Carl met a lot of Republicans who are union members. Not really surprising, but again, we don't hear much from them wearing SEIU hats, taking care of veterans, taking care of older people. And in this clip, you're going to meet Mary Jo, who is a teacher. Here's a clip from Citizen Coke.
I knew I wanted to be a teacher in seventh grade.
I want to open the cap.
I wanted to make a difference for one child. It was everything I ever wanted. I worry about the young people in the profession. I worry about the students' needs. So even though I feel like I am truly a conservative, truly a Christian conservative, Governor Walker's agenda frightens me. It's made me question whether or not they truly represent me and what I believe in.
That's another teacher's home, again, opulent. You know, I don't get where regular people have become the enemy. You know, I've served at every level, and now it's you're the bad guy.
Next up I have is for Brian Cunningham.
I want to thank you for being here today because my voice has been stolen from me. It was hard being a correctional officer 10 years ago. It's almost impossible now. You pay us to go there to do that job. Scott Walker's Act 10 has blocked that job. He said it's about money. Let's break the unions. Let's break the money train to support political parties. It's tough to go and protect the state of Wisconsin every day.
Brian, if you were thinking about what were the one or two immediate things maybe that we should focus on to improve safety.
Recall Walker.
That is a clip from the new documentary Citizen Coke. You heard from Mary Jo and Brian, a correctional officer. What do you think, what would happen if the media spent more time giving a voice to people that challenge our own assumptions, like Republican union members who oppose the Republican Party's agenda?
Republican union members, lifelong...
anti-choice. I mean, these are hardcore...
NRA members.
Right.
They're veterans. They're military veterans. Brian, who just heard from, spent 20 years in the U.S. military. He fought on the front lines in the first Gulf War. He's active in the reserves. You know, if you were to listen to the media, you think that there's only, you know, two kinds of Republicans. There's the Tea Partiers, and then there are the politicians who are carrying out their agenda. These people are fighting, you know, there's a civil war happening in the Republican Party, and these folks that we talk to are on the losing side.
With so much coverage of this recall and what would happen in Wisconsin, why didn't we hear more from these people?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I'm not equipped to answer that question. I think you did hear a bit of it in the state of Wisconsin. But, you know, look, there's a moment in Citizen Coke where we're talking with Governor Walker's spokesperson and asking her flat out what it is that these out-of-state billionaires are going to get in exchange for their contributions. And afterwards, the press gaggle, the local media, came up and said, that was a really good question. And Tia said, well, why don't you guys ask the question? They said, because we would be banned from the campaign and we would lose our access.
Hmm. That's right. There are repercussions. And we were able to ask questions that local journalists couldn't because we didn't have, you know, we could burn those bridges. And we're not afraid of doing that.
And we did.
But I can tell you, I mean, I think one of the reasons the media doesn't cover, you know, the Kochs with deploying $400 million in the last election gives them a bigger voice and gives their strain of Republicanism, which is really an extreme version of conservative ideology, it gives their voice more weight. It doesn't mean that there are more of them. It doesn't mean that they're smarter or they're... It means that they have more money and they could speak louder than everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, imagine so much of the messaging around what happened in Wisconsin with Governor Scott Walker's attack on collective bargaining rights was casting public employees, the people who, you know, have noble professions, who teach our kids and do the dirty work in the state day to day, were cast as the bad guys, as Brian said in that clip. And, you know, that message is reinforced over and over and over again by a lot of these outside ads coming in. That's how the debate is set. That's how a lot of press covered it is. You've got these public employees with their cushy pensions and then the rest of us, us versus them. And, you know, what you learn when you talk to these guys is, yeah, collective bargaining is important, but it's not just about the money. Brian's bargaining over safety, you know, over what kinds of transmitters they get to carry if there's a fight that breaks out in a prison.
The other thing that was striking was the low salaries these people make, for dedicating decades of their lives to public service, and they're making $40,000 a year. That's right. When we premiered our film at Sundance, the Koch's net worth collectively was $68 billion. In the years since then, they've earned $32 billion. I'm not talking about how much their company is worth. I'm talking about how much they, too, as individuals are worth.
Their net worth.
Their net worth. I think Mari Jo may have had a wage freeze on her during that time. She hasn't earned an extra penny. In fact, they took a wage cut. They took effectively a salary cut because they had to contribute more to their pensions and their health care. Now, they weren't opposed to that, but they didn't want their union stripped from them.
Tia Lesson and Carl Diehl are producers and directors of the new documentary Citizen Koch, which premiered at Sundance in 2013 and will be in Northern California at June 27th. They're still trying to find theaters, and so they're asking you to call your local theater to ask them to play and show Citizen Koch.
If you live in the Bay Area, if you live in San Francisco, Berkeley, Oakland, call your local theaters. If you don't live in those communities, there's a mechanism called TUG, TUG.com. It will enable you to get your local theater to book our film for a night. It's a really cool way to, we call it theater on demand, and they give you the very easy tools. You don't have to lay out any money. All you have to do is have, you know, a group of 30 or so friends and colleagues who want to see the film.
Okay. So listeners in the South Bay and the Santa Cruz area, again, it's TUG.
TUG, T-U-G-G.com.
Okay.
Look for the title Citizen Koch, and all the information is there for you.
Great. And let's hear from some more callers. Let's go to Neil in Palo Alto. Hi, Neil. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, how are you doing? I have maybe two or three points or questions. Maybe your guests could comment on limits versus light, and by that I mean especially in light of Citizens United, whether there should be more efforts to have campaign finance limits and or an effort to have a constitutional amendment to permit such amendments, which I think would be a very uphill battle, versus or in addition to light, and by that I mean greater laws and or enforcement laws on tracing the money, following the money. My general view is, yes, this may be a problem, but usually limits or fixes through limits usually cause more problems than they solve, because lawyers, including myself, can always find a way around them rather than just trying to have as much light through tracing and reporting is probably the best mechanism, including to have things like unions to be a counterbalance to what I'll call individual or corporate money. So a lot packaged in that question, but maybe your guests can comment on that.
Well, I think they're great mechanisms right now. You can go online. Maplight.org is a Bay Area group that allows you to follow money and which politicians are on the take. OpenSecrets.org is another website. But, you know, there's only so much, you know, information that they have. So much of this is hidden. So much of the spending goes under the radar. Yes, absolutely, we need more disclosure. But the very people that are waging this fight to deregulate campaign finance are the same people who are also opposed to disclosure. I mean, there was a Disclose Act up for vote in the Congress, and Mitch McConnell opposed it. I mean, he took it down. This is the guy who said, you know, we need disclosure. So I think personally, I think we need both. I think you need disclosure and you need limits.
Well, thank you for calling in, Neil. We have an email from Stephen in San Rafael who says, if the numbers of union Republicans in Wisconsin are large, why do you think the recall effort of Scott Walker failed?
You know, there's something that's very instructive. You know, in the final weeks before the recall election, there was an ad that flooded the state. It was a big ad blitz. I think about $500,000 was spent broadcasting this. And the message of the ad was, recall is not the Wisconsin way. Now, who funded that ad? The Koch brothers and their network, their funding network. It didn't come out till very recently that that's what the money was behind the ad. There was some nondescript, you know, front group there on the last card on the ad. Well, what did the voters say in the exit polls who voted for Walker? They said, recall is not the Wisconsin way. I mean, they were taking, I mean, those ads were very effective. You cannot discount the impact and the power of this broadcast spending.
Yeah. Yeah. It was part of the messaging, you know, and it was that ad. It was the operatives who were speaking to the media. That was the message that was the people pounded away on. And the state was divided, and a lot of people just didn't step up at the very end of the day. They were happy to sign the recall petitions, and then...
Well, there was also intimidation. I mean, the folks who signed every signature on those recall petitions was posted by an extreme right-wing group, and you could find out if your neighbor or your judge or your local reporter signed the recall petition. There were lots of repercussions for school teachers and others. There was an atmosphere of intimidation, and I can't imagine that didn't make an impact on voters.
And didn't Governor Walker talk about divide and conquer?
Mm-hmm. Yep. He was captured on tape. We have it in our film, talking to the richest woman in Wisconsin, Diane Hendricks, billionaire. And she says, you know, how can we make Wisconsin a red state? What are you going to do about that?
Well, she wants to get rid of pensions.
She wants to get rid of everything.
She wanted to make Wisconsin a right-to-work state,
right,
too. And she asked him point blank, you know, what are we going to do? But the interesting thing about the question she asked was, how are we ever going to become a right-to-work? How, you know, we want to be a red state. What can we do to help you? And they're connecting the idea that organized labor is standing in the way of a state like Wisconsin becoming fully red state. And, you know, and it's something that we learned along the way as we came to understand these attacks on organized labor and collective bargaining as not an ideological battle. It's pure political strategy. Because if they could take the money that organized labor spends in elections, and keep in mind organized labor is spending the money of their members, of working people, then, you know, they're the only show in town. Then the rest, if you look at a list of the top 10 outside spenders in elections, three of those are unions. You take them out of the equation, and it's all red.
Because another influential man, I think with Americans for Prosperity, said they wanted to hit the unions in their knees.
That's right.
So the unions are the target. Because some people say, why would they go after teachers who are making 40 grand? But it's not necessarily that they're going after the teacher. They're going after the money that the union gives to politicians.
The unions amass dues from their members, and they can aggregate that, and they can become a substantial political force. Now, even then, I mean, even the top 10 unions don't spend as much on behalf of millions of members as the Koch brothers.
Well, and that's what I wanted to ask you, because when you hear about rulings like McCutcheon or Citizens United, the reporting often says unions and corporations are now allowed to do A, B, and C. Unions and corporations. So it's almost like it's apples and apples, like they're equal. What do you think of that framing?
It's totally wrong equation. I mean, they are not equal. I mean, I think, first of all, unions have to disclose the money they spend. Corporations do not. And secondly, unions represent real people. Corporations are pieces of paper. Unions are advocating an agenda that is pretty transparent. I mean, they're trying to raise the minimum wage. They're trying to install, you know, worker safety and worker rights, you know, in the workplace. That is not an agenda that you can discount easily as profit driven. I would also say that the unions are not just about political spending; they're about getting out the vote. You know, it was the unions in the Midwest, in the battleground states, that delivered the election in 2012 for Barack Obama. And if they can disable, if the extreme right can disable that get-out-the-vote mechanism and those, you know, working people from knocking on those doors, you know, it's they are the only show in town.
But since Citizens United, the narrative has been that unions and corporations can do this. Can you talk about that, Carl? What do you think of that framing?
Well, I mean, it's clearly a misdirect if you just look at the numbers of spending. Well, first of all, it's not true. I mean, they're nowhere near being equal. But like Tia pointed out, you know, one group is spending is an aggregation of money of real people, of millions of people, and the other is not.
And I think Li Fong, the investigative journalist, did a comparison and looked at the amount of money spent by the top 10 unions in the 2012 elections, and compared that to the Kochs. And I think the Kochs outspent all those millions of members by a factor of three. They spent three times more. And
so
those are just two brothers.
Right. That's not the other side. That's just two of the billionaires on the right.
And again, Bloomberg recently reported that a $1.3 billion boost to the collective fortune of the Koch brothers sent their net worth above the $100 billion mark. Charles and David Koch are now the fifth and sixth wealthiest people in the world. And you said the wealthiest in the United States, number one?
They are, if you take them together, they would be. But,
okay.
But officially, because we look at their wealth separately, I guess they come after Gates and Buffett. But, you know, I think we all ought to send them a note of congratulations. Isn't that swell?
Tia Lesson and Carl Diehl are the filmmakers behind the new documentary Citizen Koch. They turned to Kickstarter to raise money for their film to ensure that the documentary was not silenced by the money and influence of David Koch, and they did it successfully. You can watch the trailer at yourcallradio.org, and it'll be debuting in the Bay Area June 27th. And we have time for a few more callers. Let's hear from David in San Francisco. Hi, David.
Operator.
Oh. Sorry, I think we lost David. We've got an email from Nicholas who says there's an ambitious project to draw attention to the ways that big money is corrupting our government and stealing our republic. It's a march from Los Angeles to Sacramento starting on May 17th. Look at marchfordemocracy.org. Thank you for that, Nicholas. That sounds interesting. And Jason writes, the reason why the corporate right wing cuts funding for public broadcasting and that same time the Kochs write them big checks is not a contradiction. They never want to kill public broadcasting, just make it hungry for funds. Think of how little money it takes to get leverage on PBS versus commercial broadcasting. Just the roll-in for the news hour on PBS is revealing, including BEA Systems as a sponsor.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, it's the same. The same is true when they try to, you know, privatize our schools and privatize the postal service and privatize the, you know, all of government. I mean, they want to swoop in and make the money and create the agenda. And we know for a fact when the Kochs make contributions, for example, to academic institutions, there are a lot of strings attached. They get to select the faculty. They get to create the agenda for the curriculum that the kids are learning. It's very insidious.
Where is this documented?
Well, you look at Kansas University, Carl's alma mater. Mm-hmm. You look at the George Mason University in the D.C. area. There's a lot of we can send you a link, you know, to the good investigative reports about that.
Please do. We have an email from Rob who says, I was taught the government employees, teachers, etc. were guaranteed a good pension because they were willing to take less money up front. This is done to bring in quality talent. It's a shame that this is falling apart. Thank you for the email, Rob. Good point.
It's a great point. It's, you know, the pensions are their deferred compensation.
You know what? Our parents were all civil servants. My parents worked for the federal government. Carl's worked for the state government in Illinois, and they got pensions. Mm. They got to retire. They didn't live high off the hog, but they believed in what they were doing, and they lived comfortable lives, and we're grateful for that.
Well, David in San Francisco is back. Hi, David.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. We're almost out of time, but go ahead.
I wanted to bring up, I've gotten in sort of late on the conversation. I don't know if you brought up ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, that started in the 70s, because they send template legislation to what are actually right-wing legislations, state legislations around the country. Have you all discussed that?
No, but thank you for bringing it up. We did a show about this about a year ago. It got so much attention at one point, and I haven't heard much about it in the last couple of months.
Nobody seems to know about it. The other thing is I started a thing on change.org about impeaching Roberts because the Supreme Court, I mean, those courts, those decisions are they bought off? I mean,
well, actually,
right into the Koch brothers kind of attitude.
We show you in our film that Ginny Thomas, the wife of Clarence Thomas, started a tea party. She was a Tea Party activist, and she, in the aftermath of the Citizens United decision, benefited from that decision directly. Her organization got money that she was enabled to spend politically on Tea Party candidates.
And she's not in the background. She's on stage.
Front and center.
Speaking.
Front and center, and Thomas should have recused himself from that decision.
I mean, one other reason, very quickly, Rose, why Thomas maybe should have recused himself from the decision is there was an ad campaign run when he was nominated to be an Associate Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court that paid for by, guess who? The organization Citizens United, which went on to which Thomas went on to rule in their favor.
Right. We have about a minute left. There are calls to repeal Citizens United from some politicians, a constitutional amendment. But what do you think citizens can do about this?
We have links on our website, citizencoke.com. We can connect you with organizations working on the local level that are fighting for change, for more accountability, for exposure, and to overturn Citizens United.
I mean, it's hard enough to get campaign finance in the state of California.
That's absolutely right.
And just quickly, based on the reporting you did and the McCutcheon decision, do you see this just getting worse? Do you think that the 2016 presidential election will be even more expensive than the last one?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, just the midterms right now are on track to be, you know, unprecedented levels of spending. And that's going to affect us all. It's going to affect us all.
And that's what makes the reporting so crucial.
We got to pay attention to this. We got to care. It's not about money and politics. It's about the water we drink. You know, it's about our kids. It's about our communities. We got to stop this.
Tia Lesson and Carl Diehl are the filmmakers behind Citizen Coke. It'll be in the Bay Area June 27th. Call your local theater to get it there. You can also go to TUGG.com and check out the trailer at yourcallradio.org. Tia and Carl, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us, Rose.
Yes, thanks, Rose.
Thank you, and thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. What role does poetry play in your life? On the next Your Call, we'll mark National Poetry Month by speaking with poets. How does poetry inspire, motivate, inform, and transform individuals and society? If you've only recently discovered poetry, what opened your eyes to it? Who is your favorite poet? And what poems have made a long-lasting impression on you? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David LaTulipe is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.